Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's time for Cover 2 Broncos. Just a couple dudes breaking down scheme, film, and the numbers. Now, your host, Joe Rowles.
Welcome back to another episode of Cover 2 Broncos. I am Joe Rowles, and today I have the privilege to talk to Lori Fitzpatrick of USA Today. Thanks for joining me. I'm stoked.
Yeah, man. Thanks so much for having me. I'm looking forward to this weekend and kind of discussing what our teams are all about, right? After we witnessed this week one.
Well, I mean, week one is, you know, basically the microcosm of the whole season. So I am really excited to see the Houston Texans go on to the Super Bowl. I think they're gonna, I think I might pick the Eagles just because I think Jalen Hurts, I mean, he just looks unstoppable. But no, yeah, I think we do this every year. Like, we kind of get into this mindset of, like, you know, everybody's waiting through the preseason of the first little bit of action. Stuff happens, and all of a sudden, like, we all draw these huge conclusions.
Everybody's dying for a take, right? You know?
Yep. And you know, so. all of our priors, we have to confirm those, you know? So. But, I mean, I watched both games. I was impressed with Trevor Lawrence's arm strength, first and foremost. Like, I did not watch much of the Jaguars in the preseason. I watched a little bit of Florence when he was coming out of Clemson. Obviously, like, the Broncos didn't have a chance at him. I knew you guys were never, like, he was never making it past first overall. So I didn't focus on him when I studied the quarterbacks, but I was impressed with the arm strength. What did you kind of think of him based on that? Because I think, like, that's kind of the best place to start.
Yeah, so I kind of wrote about it on the Touchdown Wire, and I kind of touched on they wanted me to write about his turnovers, right? But kind of having, like, I don't have, like, a bias necessarily. I guess, you know, maybe I do a little tiny bit. But in terms of, like, just his overall play, despite the turnovers, I feel like he did well. Like, he threw the ball hard, like you're saying. You know, it got out of his hand quickly. He made some mistakes. But honestly, the offensive line did terrible, and he didn't get sacked, and he was able to avoid a lot of the pressure. So he had really good footwork in the in the pocket. You know, he was really good at evading the rushers, then throwing off of his back foot, even kind of stopping and then making sure that his body was right before he followed through on the throw. He took chances. He made some passes in tight windows. He led some receivers. And then like the downside, he had a couple overthrows that are a little concerning. And then some chances that he took where, you know, the interceptions did happen. So, you know, there was a lot of upside, and then the downside kind of outweighed the upside, because the downside with interceptions is like, you know, takeaways. And that's, any team that has more takeaways is usually going to win the game. So It was unfortunate, but there were a lot of very good things that, you know, you saw from him in week one.
And that's one of those things that I think like people watching the box score see what kind of happens, and they just think, oh, the Broncos are probably going to roll in this game. And honestly, I thought Trevor Lawrence's arm strength is good enough that he's going to be able to test the windows in the Broncos zone. So that's a concern for me. I thought you guys had some decent runs. I thought James Robinson looked good. I thought like there's plays there. I also thought the Jaguars receivers had some drops. And if that gets cleaned up, yeah. And if that gets cleaned up, all of a sudden Lawrence's numbers look a lot better. And I think DJ Shark is a matchup problem for Kyle Fuller for sure. And Bryce Callahan, cause he's tall, and Laviska Shenault he's a freak.
Yeah, man. Yeah. He has something about him where he never, ever, ever goes down on the first attempt at a tackle. Like ever. The dude is crazy. I don't know what his core workout is, but he can carry guys at least 3 yards before, you know, before he goes down, which is amazing. So I think it's going to be a big part of the game this upcoming week, is kind of giving it to Laviska in the flat or bubble screens to kind of give him a chance to make a big play, maybe get that first down, or, you know, when it's like third and short or second and short, even, you know, throwing it behind the line of scrimmage and letting him kind of run with it.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I think that, because I agree with you, I think Laviska is going to be a huge part of the game plan. And one of the things that'll help with too is, on paper, to me, the Broncos pass rush against the Jaguars line should favor the Broncos. Obviously, Bradley Chubb's health is a concern for me, just because on the Giants, in the Giants game, without Bradley Chubb, the Broncos edge rotation, their third and fourth edge rushers are Jonathan Cooper and Andre Mintz. And they are rookies. Cooper is a seventh round pick. Mintz is an undrafted free agent. They both look good in the preseason, but obviously there's a decent jump from the preseason to the regular season. Both of the Giants touchdowns actually happened when they were both on the field together. And the first one, the touchdown on Patrick Surtain, happened. If you watch Jonathan Cooper and Andre Mintz, well, Cooper gets taken out by Devontae Booker on a chip block, just like completely depleted. Like it's like a Madden clip. And Mintz is just ineffective. Which, I mean, it happens, you know, you're a rookie redshirt, you're not always going to get there, but that is a concern for me. But I do think if Von Miller's on the field, like that is going to be a concern for the Jaguars, and getting Shenault involved is a way to kind of like try and mitigate that.
Yeah, no. And I think it's something where, you know, going over the middle of the field is definitely a spot where Lawrence excels. So it may be a little bit of an issue for you guys, but it's tough because it's going to be a brand new defense, you know, that they're not used to seeing. And the Texans kind of just ran like two over the top, you know, just like cover two the whole game. So you guys like switch it up a lot.
Yeah. And that's actually something I'm curious about too with this, because so Fangio's system is predicated on basically they base out a too high pre-snap, but the safeties will spin. They spin probably more than any defense in the league. So they might end up in cover three. They might end up in cover one. They use a lot of pattern match cover three, where it'll look like cover three, but it's actually playing out similar to man. I know you know this, but you know, for our listeners.
Yeah.
And so like Lawrence, on the times I've watched him, like that has been a thing before where a spinning safety can throw him. So I'm kind of expecting Fangio to try and dial that up even more to try and kind of like get him to hesitate.
Yeah, so like what I think is going to happen is last week there weren't really many underneath routes that were thrown. So I think that this week there's definitely going to be some some crossers, some underneath crossers that Lawrence is going to try to take advantage of, because you know the best way to kind of get a rookie quarterback acclimated or just the quarterback that, you know, maybe is having some issues or some doubts, is to just have more short passing, so it's high percentage throws, so high percentage for the catch, right? So I think they're going to throw some underneath routes to kind of make those linebackers step up and then get those one-on-one matchups on the outside with Chark and Marvin Jones. So I think it's going to be something where they're going to force your safeties to kind of make a decision. There may even be some tight end seam routes in there to kind of, you know, make them bite on one guy where they have to either, you know, make a choice, right? And then there'll be a guy open on the outside. So I think early on it'll be a lot of underneath short passing routes because they didn't do that last week. They didn't ease him in at all. They were like, Lawrence, you know, throw 51 times and throw them deep. And so, like, it just seemed like he's kind of in over his head. And so I think this week it's just going to be more like rinky-dink, like passes underneath, because he's really good at the percentage of throwing in the middle, short passes in the middle of the field. So, because he's tall enough to kind of get it over those linemen, right? So he can kind of just throw it right over them, and then it's kind of up to either the wide receiver like LaVisca, or it's up to the running back to kind of make those yards after catch. And then you'll kind of see him maybe open up the defense a little bit and go a little bit deeper.
And one thing that might help in that regard for you guys too is the fact that, and again, we don't know yet. We're recording this on Wednesday, guys, but Shelby Harris and Shamar Stephen were both limited in practice today. And Shelby Harris, I think dating back to when he joined the Broncos in 2017, he leads the league in batted passes at the line. So even like with Trevor Lawrence's height, like that was something I would be looking for. But if Harris can't go, like obviously that helps you guys. So
yeah, and honestly, the one of the first passes that Lawrence took was batted at the line. So hopefully that's something like he just goes, oh shucks, like I really need to make sure I pay attention to that, because it just seemed like he kind of came out like last day's goal and he was like, yeah, I'm just gonna throw this out route, and it was like doink. It was just like, damn, like the first time you come out in preseason, you get sacked. Mm-hmm. And then the first time you come out week one, it's batted at the line. Like nothing has started well. So that could be something that, you know, the Broncos fans can definitely look out for is getting those mitts on the ball at the line of scrimmage.
How beyond like kind of like the controlled passing game, is there anything specific that you expect from the offensive line and from pass pro to try and help keep Trevor Lawrence from having a lot of bodies in the pocket?
So I think that they're going to run some 12 personnel. You know, they're going to have some more blockers in there. I wouldn't even surprise if they came out in a jumbo, right? So throw an extra lineman in there, you know, because I don't know if you saw, and I tweeted this last week on PFF, AJ Cann, the right guard, percentage, like a grade, mm-hmm. of 9.2.
Oh, woof.
And that's not out of 10.
Yeah.
That's out of 100. So he had like 6 pressures. And, but that's the good thing, like that's a good thing about Trevor Lawrence, right? His right guard did so bad and he didn't really get sacked at all. And he was under pressure sometimes, but he seemed like he had everything under control. So I think it's just going to be more of getting the ball out quicker and not relying on your offensive line to like have to hold for so long. And that's going to be, you know, that's going to be up to also the run game as well, kind of establishing the run so that either they bite on the play action to give them more time what are those? You know how sometimes you forget the name of a play so quickly, right? Where it's like the quarterback drops back like it's a pass, but then he hands it off.
Draw runs.
I think they're gonna run some of those as well. I don't know why. I just like, you know, good. You have like a brain fart sometimes, right? So, I think they'll run some draw plays too. It'll kind of keep the defense on their toes. And especially Von Miller out there. I mean, he's a beast. So
yeah,
definitely got to watch out for him. But honestly, I don't see it as like a huge issue just because last week, you know, it wasn't so bad. And I know the Texans defensive line isn't as good as the Broncos defensive line. So people were listening like, all right, you know, we'll watch. We'll see, which, you know, I can't, you're not wrong. But from what we saw last week, it wasn't like a huge issue. And there were a lot of mistakes where Trevor Lawrence didn't dump it off. He didn't check down when he should have, or he should have ran out with his feet, because, you know, Clemson, Trevor Lawrence, right? He's looks like he runs like a gazelle. He got -2 rushing yards last week. He didn't run at all. And so I think Urban is going to try to help him a little bit with saying, dude, you need to check the ball down, throw it to your running back. Or he's going to say, you know what, roll out and run for those 2 extra yards, because just as long as he slides, I think he'll be fine. So it's getting the ball out quick, draw plays, and running with Trevor.
Well, and that's one of those things where the fact that Harris is hurt or could be hurt, and then Shamar Stevens limited, and then Bradley Chubb is questionable. Like, I am definitely concerned about the Broncos pass rush, because if they're missing all three of those guys, that's not going to help. And I also think, like, to your point, like, Trevor Lawrence has never had like a standout offensive line at Clemson, and he did a pretty good job of handling the pass rush there. And he did show up against the Houston Texans kind of managing the pass rush. And sacks are a QB stat in a lot of ways, because at the end of the day, based on what they do, they can kind of manage that. I mean, on the other side of the ball, like, that's what Teddy Bridgewater did against the Giants. The Broncos had issues in pass pro, but Bridgewater did a great job managing the pocket. Honestly, that, like, beyond the numbers, beyond the completions, you know, all the other stuff, that was the thing that impressed me most in that game, is Leonard Williams and Dexter Lawrence were just camping in the backfield. And multiple times they pushed Lloyd Cushenberry back and got through, and Bridgewater would find a way to escape and or buy himself just enough time to get rid of the ball.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you, so there was one play where Tyrod Taylor, who is a little bit more agile and nimble than Teddy, but still, like, at the same time, the quarterbacks are looking downfield to pass it. So the fact that, you know, you can avoid pressure, you know, that's pretty flat across the league, right? So if you can avoid pressure, then you can avoid pressure. And, oh man, Clavon Chaisson tried to sack Tyrod Taylor, and he missed like twice. He got into the backfield. He was free. He didn't even get blocked, and he still missed him. So that is definitely going to be an issue. I think Bridgewater may break some ankles this weekend. I'm nervous. The defense is a huge problem. And they stacked the box, and they're still not getting, like, they still didn't get sacks, and they didn't put as much pressure as what I've liked to see when you look at the amount of blitzes that they had. So that's a little concerning. So I'm hoping, you know, just, you know, of course you don't want to hear this, but I'm hoping that, you know, the Jaguars do better than they did last week in terms of pressure and actually bringing down the quarterback. After that showing, I'm a little nervous how Teddy, when I saw that one play that he stiff armed that rusher coming at him, and then he threw that pass. Oh man, that looked beautiful and also made me nervous at the same time. I was like, dang, that was nice. So I'm definitely a little nervous about that.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite plays from the game. But the thing is, yeah, Azeez Ojulari for the Giants, though, and then Lorenzo Carter, both of them found their way into the backfield as well. So the fact that you guys got Josh Allen and Kalavon Chaisson, like, I'm definitely nervous about that, because, and the other thing is, the Giants did this with Patrick Graham a decent bit. They were mixing in stunts, and they were also, like, there's a couple parts to this. They were doing end tackle stunts at times, and that was working. They got that to work against Garrett Bowles and Dalton Risner once, with Lorenzo Carter getting into the backfield. That was the play where Teddy Bridgewater bailed out, and then he scrambled and he gained like 6 or 7 yards, and he almost got, you know, his head taken off. But there was a play later in the game where Azeez Ojulari got by, and again, like, it's definitely a concern, because you guys have talented edge rushers.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you look at Josh Allen, you know, he's getting there. It's just, you need help, right? Yeah. So you need either a stunt on the other side, you know, where Teddy kind of, you know, runs away from the stunt, and then Josh Allen is there to get him, to bring him down, because he can't do it alone. And they have the speed on the edges, like, especially with Chaisson, he's fast, but they're not getting there because of the misdirection. So, like, either the misdirection or it's like an offensive lineman is pulling and they're getting blocked. So it's always like they're getting there, but they're not finishing. So you're hoping, you know, that they progress to the next level and like, okay, well, let's get better next week. But obviously the same thing could happen where they get to the right position, but then they can't bring them down. They don't wrap up. Like they had like an issue tackling last week, and that's kind of hard to fix week to week, right? Mm-hmm. 'Cause you're not really practicing. You're not tackling at full speed and during practice during the season. So it's something where like Urban and the defensive line coaches have to say, like, listen, you really need to, instead of trying to make the play, you just need to hit the guy that's in front of the ball carrier to kind of blow it up before they get a chance to kind of break that line of scrimmage. And that's what they need to do. Instead of trying to like evade the blockers and get around them to make the play and to like wrap up, they need to just kind of blow through them to like, you know, just blow up the play overall. So it was definitely an issue. I think misdirection would help you guys. But Miles Jack is fast, right? So anything edge sideline to sideline, it's going to be an issue for the Broncos. I think the best bet is kind of taking it right up the middle, kind of like between the tackles and make sure you have like some misdirection, like fake screens or something to take Miles Jack out of the play. Mm-hmm. So you have the middle wide open because the safeties and the nickels on the Jaguars defense are not so good. Wingard gets beat a lot with just a simple cut. And like, you know, if you think about Javonte Williams, right? So he should be playing this week for you guys, right?
Yeah. You loved him coming out. You and I both loved him coming out.
I absolutely love him. And if he can, if the Jaguars don't wrap up like they did last week, and then Williams is playing like his normal self, it's going to be like a highlight show, man. And I'm not looking forward to that. So I'm hoping that, you know, the Jaguars get home or that, you know, they stay home and they actually wrap up. So I'm a little nervous about that, but the Broncos, they would definitely want to run in between the tackles and kind of, and make those blocks rather than like that zone, inside zone or, you know, outside zone or things like that. Think really putting your helmet on the guys and running through a specific place and targeting a specific player would definitely be the way to go.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping that they dial up more gap concepts for Javonte Williams, just because I thought that they were they were mixing in a little bit too much with inside zone or outside zone where he was having to make the multiple reads, because I thought that that was a little bit of an issue. I also thought that part of the problem the Broncos had on the ground was the fact that the Broncos ran a lot of 12. They ran a lot of 12, and at the end of the game, they mixed in 13. Again, like that escalates the number, or not escalate, but that makes the numbers a little bit misleading just because they ended the
game. You mean personnel?
Yeah, from a personnel standpoint, they used two tight end sets, 52 tight ends or more, 53% of the time against the Giants, which is a lot, obviously. Shermer normally, over you know the last 3 years, has tends to use three receiver sets about 66% of the time. But against the Giants, they went kind of like way more heavy. But part of that also is at the end of the game, they ran 13 with three tight ends seven straight times. So like,
that's interesting.
But part of that is like when you're going that heavy, most defenses are going to respond by bringing more numbers into the box, which makes it harder to run. So that was also a part of it, I thought. And that is also part of the reason why I thought Bridgewater had as many passing windows as he had. So I'm curious to see how that kind of goes forward, especially with Jerry Jeudy out now, because the Broncos are essentially carrying three NFL receivers, Kendall Hinton and Deontay Spencer. And then they have four starting caliber tight ends. So it would make more sense to go heavy and then kind of mix in shots to KJ Hamler and Tim Patrick and Cortland Sutton where you can.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah. Yeah, I think tackling is definitely going to be an issue, but the Jaguars like to stack the box, man. Rayshon Jenkins is a safety, right? He was in the box, I think, 38 times. I think, yeah, 38 times lined up inside the box. That's a lot for a safety.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it could be something where, you know, they are able to stop the run, and that's why the Texans kind of went deep, because there was only one over the top, and you know, Griffin wasn't able to get there, and neither was Tyson Campbell. So it's something where I think it plays to the Jaguars' strengths that the wide receivers aren't as, you know, you guys don't have the Judy out there. But, you know, Sutton's definitely a weapon. So, you know, but I was definitely a little more worried about the Texans wide receiver, like Brandon Cooks.
Yeah.
So I think maybe it'll be something where they attack the Jaguars linebackers instead, because they looked really bad in zone last week. So hopefully they stick to man-to-man, and it'll be just be like a power game, right? Let's just try to run each other over, and whoever tackles the most wins.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's one of those things, too, that for our listeners. Well, first of all, I want to mention this here, since we're talking a little bit about Cortland Sutton. There's a video out, again, if you guys are listening to this on Thursday, you probably are seeing the video at some point today, of Cortland Sutton from practice yesterday, where he looks, quote-unquote, like hobbled or whatever, because it's a placement drill, it's a foot placement drill. Yes, he's recovering from the ACL tear from last year. Yes, he's, like, you know, still working through it, but he's not on the injury report. He's 100% as far as, like, he's ready to play. Like, if that changes, obviously, you know, that changes. But, like, as of now, like, there's no reports that he's having issues with his knee. But to your point, the Jaguars with Joe Cullen, they run a lot of single high safety. So if the Broncos can get somebody isolated, the shot could be there for, like, KJ Hamler.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And really, the secondary is the biggest issue for the Jaguars defense right now, because their run defense is pretty good. Mm-hmm. And they played okay last week. It was really the secondary where some switches had like a miscommunication was definitely an issue. And you know, Griffin tried to do too much, where he was watching his receiver go over the top, and then it looked like maybe Chaisson was going to make the sack, and Tyrod got away from him. And then Griffin, by the time he turned back around, his receiver was downfield, still running his route. And then they got like a 40-yard pass. So it's something where, you know, Griffin has to just worry about his own man and do his own job. And I think, you know, it could be okay, but I'm definitely still nervous, man. Definitely still nervous that, you know, Hamler's a good, you know, wide receiver. I can't believe he made that drop last week.
Yeah, same.
Oh my God.
No, yeah.
That was like heartbreaking. I was like, I didn't really tweet a lot about other games last week, but I tweeted like big capital letters, like, oh my God, I cannot believe he dropped that. That was crazy. Oh yeah. Boy.
And to his credit, like, there was a third down after, like, you know, a little bit later in the game, like first drive of the third quarter, where Bridgewater escaped pressure and he was trying to make something happen. And KJ Hamler had gotten open in the middle of the field on a comeback, but he kept moving to get himself open, so he wasn't just static. And he ended up coming up with a big catch, going up for the ball to get it to bring it in for Bridgewater. So I am concerned about the drop, if only because, like, that is something that coming out of Penn State, that was a question I had about Hamler, and he didn't play enough last year that we necessarily solved that question. So I definitely do hope that, you know, he proves that his hands are better than, like, my fears. But
yeah, I mean, that's more of like an anxiety. Yeah, that's more of like an anxiety definitely. Thing. So it's something where, just as long as he gets out of his own head, yeah, you know, he should be fine.
And I think we on the outside too, I think we underestimate how difficult, like, a sky shot, like, because essentially you're doing this, putting your hands up and letting it come down to you. So it's easy to screw that up.
Well, and run at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, it's really, like, honestly, I don't know if it looks easy, but it's really hard in person, like, to track a ball and, like, not trip over your own feet and the defenders, because if you trip over the defender's feet, they're not calling a, you know, a defensive pass interference. Like, that's on you. You know, only if they like extend their arms really is when you get a defensive pass interference. Otherwise, you know, you're just going to be on a not top 10 on Friday. So
one other question I have for you is the special teams, because I thought the Jaguars special teams actually showed up in a couple really good ways. I thought you guys were pretty close to getting a block on a punt. I thought you guys almost blocked a kick at one point. Obviously you didn't, but it was close. And if, I don't know if you know this, I don't blame you if you don't, but in Denver, we don't call them special teams. We call them shitty teams, because basically, because since Tom McMahon has taken over as the coordinator, the Broncos special teams have been one of the 10 worst in football for 3 straight years. Last week was promising, but I think we're all still a little bit nervous of, you know, going into each week with that. Do you think special teams could be a factor?
After hearing what you just said, absolutely. So as someone who, like, you know, intently listens to Urban Meyer and watches the changes that he's making to this team and the roster entirely, we all thought that he put way too much into special teams. He like dropped guys and signed guys, like Rudy Ford is an example, who's like starting now. And he was just a special teamer on the Eagles when he played there because he was so good at special teams. And he's like a starter on the Jaguars because he does so well on special teams. And then he can also play okay on defense. And it's just like, what? So like he puts a lot of effort and a lot of like, he puts a lot of time and thought into special teams because he thinks how, like how big of a deal it is in the NFL. Because, you know, whoever gets turnovers or takeaways, like I said in the beginning, like you have a good chance of winning the game. And if you're able to like block a punt and get really good field position to like let your kind of rookie get like a one up or a jump start on offense, it could be huge. So I think, you know, maybe we shouldn't just like, you know, go over to red zone when they're punting this week. I think we should pay attention because it could be something crazy could happen. You never know.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's one of those things where when I'm watching most games, when like punts and stuff come on, that's when I like usually go and check like, oh, let's see what's going on Twitter. On the Broncos for 2 years now, I haven't been able to do that just because I'm always like, oh God, please don't allow a touchdown.
So yeah, no, it's definitely, I'm definitely going to be watching in very, very closely this upcoming week on special teams. You never know. Maybe you'll see a couple fakes or something like that. That'll be cool, right? You're like, no, that would not be cool.
It wouldn't. I would rather it be completely boring on special teams. And it's one of those things like the Broncos special teams against the Giants, like during the game, it was one of those situations where I was like, oh, I think they're playing pretty good. And like, part of it was just because like nothing bad happened. But like when I went back over the tape of it, I was like, yeah, there was one punt where it was a little bit close for my liking. But other than that, I thought they held up pretty okay. So like I'm hopeful, but it may also just be the fact that the Giants may not have the personnel to rush it. So we'll see. Where do you land so far on Urban Meyer? Like, having said that, you've been listening to his pressers and stuff. Like, I do the same thing with Fangio. And I don't want to, like, you know, put you on the spot too much, but like, I know people in Denver are very attentive to all the rumors and stuff from the Lockenfora, the report. I don't know if you saw this from CBS, basically about all the dysfunction and stuff with Urban Meyer. Reddit, like it was a college football Reddit, said that thing about how he was going to take the USC job. And I talked to a beat reporter who covers the Jaguars who basically said that's not true.
Well, that was like a troll. Like, yeah. Apparently, even though he's verified, it's like a troll account. So the fact that a media member on the Jaguars asked him about the USC job, and he was like, no chance, that Reddit CFB account retweeted that question and put like laughing emojis. Like, I can't believe they are actually asking about this because we were just like trolling. But everything with Urban Meyer is under a microscope. Every little thing. So it's almost like you pay attention to it, but you don't at the same time. And today I was to the point where I was responding to like people that were commenting on that thread because it was pissing me off so much. Because it was like, why are you trolling? Like, why? Like, does it help you sleep at night? Like, honestly, saying like, oh, this guy's a liar. He said no chance. Like, come on, I would lie better than that. His face is saying that, you know, he's really taking the job. And I was just responding like, how do you really think that Urban is lying about saying that there's no chance? Like, come on. Like, after week one, like, you really think that he's contemplating whether or not to, like, to leave? Like, come on, man. He's putting in, like, $1 billion, like, or $1 million renovations, and, like, he's trying to change the city of Jacksonville. And it was one game. One. I'm not going to lie, though. I was a little nervous with some of those, back to, like, your original question. And my thoughts on him and my faith in him and all that good stuff. Yeah. I think that he it's a little concerning with the illegal formations, mm-hmm. where it's like when you let your positional coaches take over so much where you don't know if they're even lining up correctly. Mm-hmm. I think that's a problem because you should want to oversee everything to make sure every single positional player is doing the right thing. So when you get like three illegal formation calls in one half because your right tackle is lined up too far off of the line of scrimmage, which makes him an eligible receiver. And then when the refs see that he's just blocking and he's not an eligible receiver, like that's a flag right there. And after the game, they asked him, like, dude, what was up with that? And he's just like, you know, he's just like, well, yeah, well, we'll have to talk with the positional coaches on that. Like, you know, that they can't do that. Basically, they can't let their guys line up off of the ball so far just so they can get a jump on the rushers that are coming off the line really fast. Like, you shouldn't have your guys line up 3 yards off the line of scrimmage. You know, that's putting your offense back, like it was like 3rd and 15 or something like that. And it's not going to help your rookie quarterback. So those little things, that's an issue. Having 12 men on the field, that's an issue. But it's also his very first game. And I get it. He was such a good college coach. But think about the level of talent from college football to the NFL. It's a huge jump. That's why it's so hard to value if a guy is going to be a bust or not, because he's always going to be a good against guys that are walk-ons. Mm-hmm. But in the NFL, you're playing against the best of the best, and everything's so much faster. So you think it's not faster for a coach, too? It's absolutely faster for a coach. And he can't have his eyes everywhere, and he's trusting on his positional coaches to be able to do that, like to have his back. And if they mess up, it's all on him. So, like, it's kind of not fair, but that's the name of the game. And when you're Urban Meyer, who's, like, the most, like, you know, successful college coach ever, you're going to get, like, I don't know if I can curse or not, but, like,
no, you're
going
to
get, like, shitted on. You're going to get shitted on by the media. And now everybody is going so deep into it, and it's just like, yeah. Why don't you guys take a step back, like, and really think about it. Urban Meyer's wife is now responding to trolls about the USC rumor. It's just like, I just feel bad for him and his family that they have to deal with all of these rumors. And now our PR lady, Amy Powlick, she's like, no, he's not going to take questions from the Broncos media staff. And then that's a huge deal. Like, oh man, it's another thing Urban is failing at. Like he's, you know, he's messing up even more. And it's just like, why is every little thing, like the Jaguars were already the worst, like in the NFL. Like, and now it's just frustrating as a fan to always get like the shit end of the stick. Yeah. And then like, now you have a coach who's like the most winningest like coach ever in college football. And you expect him to like, you know, have it together, but it's, you know, you have to be realistic. Mm-hmm. And so like, it's going to take a little bit of time. Like Rome wasn't built in a day. Right. So it's, I feel bad for the fans. I feel bad for Urban Meyer. You know, I hate how the media acts towards him. And I just think it's going to take a little bit of time for him to pull it together. I think he makes some mistakes, but you learn from them. And it's all about how he's going to do every single week moving forward. Does he change from the mistakes? Are we going to see another illegal formation? Yeah, then it's a problem. But like, before you even know it's week one, like everybody's just freaking out. And I just think it's crazy. And I think it's awful for, you know, and maybe I'm being a girl about it,
no.
but like I'm emotional about it. Cause you know, I care. Right.
No, I totally get it. Cause again, like coming into this year, basically, and again, the Broncos, like not to get into the weeds too much with this, but like the Broncos for the last 2 years have been pretty bad. Obviously there's like reasons around that. There's, you know, parts to it, but like, there's been a general narrative that Vic Fangio is a shitty head coach, or like he's a good defensive coordinator, not a good head coach. And again, like we don't know yet. Like, you know, we have because of the injury situation, but I get you. Cause I got heated about it because like I talked to, you know, college coaches or like people who really like dig into the X's and O's, and they're like, dude, like Fangio's defense is like where the NFL is going. So for me, for the longest time, it's been like, dude, give him a chance to see if like, yeah, this is good enough to deal with. The questions I have about Urban Meyer kind of center on the fact that, like, selfishly, like, first of all, like, I'm totally cool with dysfunction this week if it leads to, you know, the Broncos winning, because, like, selfishly, all that's what I want. But
yeah,
but,
of course.
But like, I think the NFL is better when teams are good. I also think the NFL is better when there's good quarterbacks in it. And like, I am nervous about like what I, you know, like the reports and stuff, not the Reddit. Like, I thought that was kind of, you know, just a thing. But I'm nervous, yeah, about like the dysfunction and stuff like that, like the rumors of that, just because I want Trevor Lawrence to be one of the better quarterbacks in football, even though it sucks he's in the AFC, but it'll be more fun to watch football if Trevor Lawrence lives up to what we all think of him. So I hope, yeah, that if Urban Meyer is the guy, I hope that like kind of comes through and we start to see that playing out.
Yeah.
And if it's not, then, yeah, like, I hope after this year, if that's how it's going to go, I hope you guys get the right coach.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's very easy to make an assumption.
Yeah.
With and like just say quote sources.
Yep.
When you know Urban's background, you know the fire that is lit under him, you know like his attitude, you know how he feels when he loses. It's so easy to say that, like to say like, oh, he's blaming everybody and he's treating the players like they're in college. Like how? Tell me. Because I don't know, because everybody is just making it up because it's easy, because you can't prove it wrong because of just his personality. So it's not like anybody could say, oh, no, that's not true, because there's nothing that's like making that base true anyway. Like, it's just you're going off of his personality, which it's like anybody's going to be mad when you lose. Are you kidding me? Like,
I'm a terrible loser, you know, for what it's worth.
Exactly. So am I. But it's like, because of Urban and how he is, he can't react anyway, or it's going to be shed in a negative light. So if he takes it easy, he's like, oh, he's not taking it serious. And, you know, oh, he's in Jacksonville, so blah, blah, blah. Then if he's too hard, then it's like, this is in college. So it's like, no matter what, he's going to be shown in a negative light. And so it's just, you know, it's how it is. But I think it's important for him to...
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Just focus on coaching Trevor, yeah, right? So Trevor took too many chances last week. So I think if he just begins to check the ball down, like, and throw like shorter passing routes, and then you let him be Trevor, right? So that was a quote today that Urban actually said in one of his pressers, like, I have to let Trevor be Trevor. When Mia, one of the media members, asked him like, hey, he didn't run the ball at all. Like, why didn't he tuck it and just run? Because, you know, we didn't want him to, you know, they don't want him to get hurt, right? But they also have to let him be him. So he's going to be successful by, you know, forcing the defense to step up and play him as a runner. And then what does that do? That opens up, you know, guys downfield. So you can't just be one-dimensional. And so just as long as they don't keep Trevor on too much of a leash, I think that would be the only way that they would, you know, kind of hinder his development. And you know, maybe taking like calling plays that take too long to develop. But it's honestly, offense is pretty easy to call, to be honest. Like, if it's not crossers across the field and you have, like, dump passes, then you can throw it to the outside, and then there's concept routes against certain zones. So, like, it's pretty easy for, like, Trevor to just see, like, okay, this guy's going to run, you know, it's like a dagger, right? So this slot runs a post, and then the outside guy, you know, either runs another post and he looks at the one safety, or he runs a fade and you throw it one-on-one. So, I mean, it's not that hard to, like, call plays to Trevor's strengths. So I don't think he'll mess it up in terms of, like, in terms of that. But maybe in terms of, like, the illegal formations, 12 men on the field, making those mistakes, if he does that again week two, then that is a problem.
Agreed.
Sorry, and I kind of, like, went off.
No, no, I'm, yeah, no, you're good. And to your point, though, that is actually one of those things I am kind of concerned about with the talent you guys have at receiver. And again, like, for Broncos fans who, you know, don't, are kind of myopic and don't maybe look, you know, beyond, like, the division, like, AJ Shark is legit. I literally think Laviska Shenault, like, with health luck, is going to end up being one of the better receivers in football, just because he can do it all and he's a freaky athlete. And the fact is, the Broncos lost Ronald Darby. And again, I'm saying this as on Wednesday. Broncos lost Darby on yesterday. And as of now, they're starting Patrick Surtain now at the boundary corner, and Bryce Callahan and Kyle Fuller. Well, Kyle Fuller gave up a 40-yard completion to Darius Slayton, and Patrick Surtain, and again, I don't blame him necessarily entirely for this, but, like, Patrick Surtain got beat for that touchdown against Daniel Jones. I think Trevor Lawrence is better than Daniel Jones.
Yeah, I mean, it's just all about matchups,
yeah,
this weekend.
Yeah, definitely.
And so, like, if the offensive line can hold, it's going to be an offensive battle, because I'm concerned about the Jaguars secondary. And from what I hear, you're a little concerned about the Broncos secondary, like, in their corners mostly. Yeah, it's going to be an offensive battle. So, I mean, I like Surtain a lot.
I do too.
Like, I actually just wrote an article on, you know, Patrick Surtain. And, you know, after everything I was reading, everybody kind of wanted to draft, like, Justin or Mac, but it's like, you have nobody to, like, you didn't really have anybody, like, else to throw to. I mean, yeah, you have, like, the tight ends, but it's also good to build the defense and then grab a quarterback, right? So I kind of like the pick, to be honest, because I think Surtain is a lockdown corner, and, you know, it doesn't take corners that long for the game to kind of slow down. So I think it's only going to take, like, a couple games for Surtain to really kind of hold his own.
No, I do too. And again, like, I think he's ready to start. My concern is more just based on the matchup stuff and based on the fact that it is basically his first start, because he played 16 snaps last week, and most of them were in dime. The Broncos in the set, I want to say.
So he played inside?
Yeah. So the Broncos have been using, and again, like, this is all going to be different for you guys, because now that Darby's out, they're not going to do this. But during camp, the Broncos, to try and get Surtain on the field and to try and create better matchups against, like, the elite tight ends they were going to face in the AFC West, they started to use more dime personnel with Surtain and Callahan in the slots. And last week, they brought it out some. So, like, that's where most of Surtain's snaps came. But for one series, they put him out on the boundary and they pulled Kyle Fuller off. And that's when, and again, I don't blame... Surtain probably should have closed on the play on the crosser a little bit faster. But honestly, the biggest complaint I have about him is the fact that after the catch was made by Sterling Shepard, his tackle attempt wasn't what it should have been, considering how little help he had downfield. But the big issue on that play, in my mind, was the fact that the Broncos pass rush was... They didn't have Von Miller on the field. They didn't have Malik Reed on the field. They didn't have Shelby Harris on the field. They had Draymond Jones... I want to say Shamar Stephen. I don't remember this. And then they had the backup edge rushers. So, like, that was the bigger issue. And that would obviously probably present issues against you guys, just because if Trevor Lawrence has time, like, he's going to be able to find people.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I mean, just from, you know, just from my own personal opinion, I don't even think the issue is what you're saying. I think the issue is just, like, switching him up, like, in the middle of,
the game.
Like, in the middle of a defensive drive, right? He's playing nickel or in dime, like inside in like the whole game, or like at least a couple of series. And then like, yeah, you throw him on the outside and expect him to like stop a play from a guy that's like on the outside. I mean, I think it's just like the switch. So I think like if he just like starts in one play, he's not like, you know, Patrick Peterson. He could just play everywhere and he's a veteran. He knows what everybody's going to do. Like, you got to give him time to really settle in, and then you switch him up and then a big play happens. It's just like, obviously, I think like if you start him on the outside, then he'll probably have a better chance. But tackling is one of his like, you know, weaknesses, I guess you could say. Like, he tries to make like a shoelace tackle in a way. He doesn't really like to, he's not like a Jalen Ramsey. He's not going to put his skull into a guy's shoulder pads or anything. Mm-hmm. But yeah, well, I'm going to have to make a call to Urban and tell him to do crossers when Sertan's on the outside. So hopefully. No, yeah, I think we'll be okay.
I expect it, to be honest. But no, to your point though, that is, I'm glad you brought that up about the piece though, because, and again, like the fact that Teddy Bridgewater played as well as he did against the Giants is probably quieting this some, but basically when the Broncos benched Drew Lock for Teddy Bridgewater, for a lot of Broncos fans, it really, and again, like I'll admit, like this is definitely something that I mentioned because I did believe in Justin Fields. I had Justin Fields as my second highest rated player. And I want to mention this for listeners, like you do a lot of draft work. We touched on this a little bit with Javonte Williams, but like you're somebody like I respect the hell out of like for the draft stuff. And so like when you say that you really like the Patrick Surtain pick, that it caught my eye because I loved Patrick Surtain. He was the top defensive player on my board. And I thought he was a hand in glove fit for the Broncos defense. But to me, just like the value that you could get if you get like Justin Fields and you're right is really hard.
Yeah.
That and also like, and again, I haven't studied these next year's class of quarterbacks yet, but like from what I've seen of them, I am not optimistic about this next class as like the solution. So it's kind of like the Broncos are kind of in a situation where they may end up be best off extending Teddy for another year and then kind of seeing what happens down the road.
Yeah. Yeah. That might be honestly your best bet. It's always hard to tell though. Especially early on in the year, because I feel like every single quarterback going into a draft for the next year, some of those guys like aren't even on the radar until the middle of the season. Yep. Like they can kind of like come out of nowhere. So I think it's important just to kind of like see how like the season goes. Because you know, you have guys that have those, like Matt Corral from Ole Miss. He's not bad. He has guys that were behind him that were like Justin Herbert. He's a guy that, you know, he's kind of like him where, you know, you never know what could happen. They could have those core like values or attributes where when they get into the NFL, you know, they pair along with a coach really well. So I just think it's important to get a defensive player, especially if you don't have like a guy at a position where it's crucial, right? Because who you guys play against is the biggest reason for your failure or your success. You're in a tough division with really good playmakers on offense. So if you want to kill a rookie quarterback because he has no defense to kind of let him get off the field and take a rest, then they're not going to have any development. So I think it's important because of the division that you're in to be able to have like lockdown corners to give your offense some rest. Cause like, dude, Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, man, they're good. So like, I think it's just important to kind of get that defensive guy first. And then, you know, build off of that a little bit, but it's definitely going to be interesting and fun to see which quarterbacks kind of come up midseason.
Agreed.
Cause the Broncos should definitely take one next year. And even if it's early on, you could still develop him behind Teddy.
That's,
you can always trade for like Gardner Minshew, you know, you never know.
I was hoping, back before Broncos traded for Teddy, I was kind of hoping they grabbed Gardner Minshew if they were going to do the competition with Locke. Gannett, I like Teddy Bridgewater a lot. I also think like his experiences, and I've said this before for our listeners, but I think he, like, the fact that he's been hurt, he's been the guy, he's been a backup, he's been a free agent and it didn't work out, and now he's with Denver. I think he has those experiences, like, for a rookie quarterback, you have a guy that has, like, a wealth of knowledge that you can kind of, like, pick his brain and learn from. And I also think, like, everything I've ever heard and read and, like, studied about Bridgewater is, like, he's the kind of guy who would be a veteran mentor. He's not, like, a Joe Flacco type where he's going to be like, it's not my job. So I do like that. So it's, like, one of those situations where I'm open to the idea if a quarterback emerges, if they extend Bridgewater as a bridge and then, like, they bring in a guy, I like it. I'm also very open to the idea, obviously, of, like, an Aaron Rodgers trade or a Matt Ryan trade, something like that. But that's, you know, we'll see. That's for next, you know, it's for like 3 months from now or 4 months from now, and I'm worrying about it. But looking back at the game though, I want to ask you, how, if the Jaguars win, how do you see it kind of coming together?
So if the Jaguars win, I've mentioned the secondary a lot. So I don't really want to go back there because obviously, you know, the secondary has to stop an offense in order, you know, for you know, the score not to get run up on them, right? So besides the secondary, I think running the ball is going to be a huge factor in the game because they didn't do well last week running. I mean, they got some first downs, but they weren't able to actually establish the run. And I'm, despite the three interceptions, I'm not that worried about Trevor Lawrence. You know, I think he'll be able to move the ball down the field. He did that a lot last week. So just as long as he can kind of, he'll be able to throw those rinky-dink passes. I think the run game is going to be a huge factor. I think James Robinson and Carlos Hyde will really have to do well if they want to think about a W.
If the Broncos win, how do you expect it to go?
It's funny because when I looked at your questions, I wrote the same thing for both.
Okay.
You know, if the Broncos win, and the Jaguars win, and both lines, I put Jaguars secondary. Yeah. So if the Broncos just like light it up, because I think the Jaguars run defense is good enough. You know, we both love Javonte Williams though, so.
Yeah,
I'm kind of interested to see how he does. But I think that the Jaguars will be able to, you know, they'll be pretty good in the run. Now watch me. Watch the Broncos break one for like 80 yards. Then that would really suck. But I think the secondary is going to be the biggest factor. So I think if you know your wide receivers can get downfield, then they can definitely win the game.
That's one of those things, like, and it's weird, because, like, if the Broncos can exploit the secondary of the Jaguars, I think after this week, we're going to start hearing a lot of people start to, like, put some love on Bridgewater's name, just because even after the performance against the Giants, like, I think at one point, like, he had the highest QBR, like, and I know, like, in terms of like, the advanced stats, he was, like, one of the top guys for the Athletics, Ben Baldwin, he does, like, the EPA. Like, I know Bridgewater was up near the top by Mahomes, and, like, still, you're not hearing much about him, so it's... I do think if the Broncos come out of this game and Bridgewater looks good, we're going to start to hear a lot about it. But I do think, to your point, I think it will depend on the wide receivers. Because Bridgewater, he's one of those guys that, like, his supporting cast really dictates how he looks.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and there were only two drops. I'm looking them up on PFF right now. You know, there were only two drops, you know, from your wide receivers. Yep. His total throw time on dropbacks was 3 seconds. Which is better than what the Jaguars was like 2.6 seconds. And then Tyrod Taylor was like 2.8. So that's how much time they had to throw. Teddy has 3 seconds, 3.5 seconds. You know, it says that he only had 3 scrambles, which I think is false. Cause sometimes PFF, you know, you got like teenagers across the country just like watching for these things. And sometimes, you know, they don't get that stuff right. But I think, you know, his offensive line, he has a good chance to do well because he has the time. His receivers aren't dropping passes. So, you know, he has a good chance. You know, hopefully he doesn't though, right?
Yeah.
but yeah, I think they'll put some respect on his name a little bit after this week, man. That one stiff arm that he put on that Giants defender, I don't know who it was, but that was nice. I'm hoping that don't happen to Chase on this week.
So, gun to your head, who do you predict comes out of this game?
I can no longer say the Jaguars are going to win because I said it last week. I was so confident. I was so confident that they were going to win, man. So I think the Broncos will win, and then maybe the universe will prove me wrong again. But I think the Broncos will maybe take this one home. You want a possible score?
Sure.
I think it's gonna be a good game in terms of passing. Might want to take the over. I don't know. Say 33-24. Maybe that's a little high in a score. But I don't know. Do you guys ever score that much? Like, how much you get last week? 27, right?
27. And no, normally we do not. Mile High Reports, Joe Mahoney does a lot of looks at like different scores and stuff, and the Broncos very rarely pass 30. So
really,
but
really,
again, Teddy. No, and I will say this though, I am confident that Teddy Bridgewater, before the end of this year, again, if he stays healthy, will be the best quarterback that the Broncos have had since Peyton Manning. So I do think that 30 is possible. But yeah, the recent history suggests that they have not done it much.
We do have something in common, Tim Tebow.
Yeah.
No, all right. I had to mention his name once, I guess, right?
What did you, since we're here, what did you think of the tight end experience with Tim Tebow?
I wish they gave him a little bit more time, but damn, he looked bad. He looked bad in blocking. But yeah. Imagine the backlash that Urban would have got if he kept him on for another week after that, like that one play that went viral of Tim Tebow, like trying to bend over and block that guy. They would have like thrown so much like privilege stuff out there and like, oh man, like he's just doing a favor, like, and all this stuff. So I'm glad that they let him go, but I would have liked to seen him get another chance, especially receiving, because the tight end for the Jaguars last week did terrible. O'Shaughnessy, he had like so many drops. Like, I just wish that, you know, they had another playmaker there. I think Tim T will be cool in the passing game, but I don't think he was ready, to be honest.
Yeah, to me, like, my favorite part about the Tim Tebow experience with you guys is the fact that it meant that Eric Saubert became a free agent, because Eric Saubert has been, so far, I have been very happy with him for the Broncos. Third tight end, so he's not going to be a household name or anything, but he's done a good job blocking. He's an underrated receiver. He's not a dynamic athlete necessarily. He's a good athlete, but he's not Albert O or Noah Fant. But as a third tight end, he's a mismatch problem. So like, I do like that. And I thought the Broncos with Shurmur, I did not think Shurmur was going to use tight ends as much as he did last week. So to me, the fact that he did is a sign that he recognizes what he has in that personnel room. But
yeah, they really ran 13 personnel. Damn, that's crazy.
Yeah. I want to say 10 times over the course of the game. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. But thank you for your time. I really, really appreciate it. And guys, if you have not followed Lori on Twitter, go do it. It is Lori Fitzpatrick. I'm going to spell out the last part just because you, it is FITZPTRCK. So no A. But go follow her.
Yeah, no A and no I. I take the vowels out, the last name. Besides the Fitz, I got to keep the Fitz intact, right? So
definitely.
Thank you so much, man.
Definitely.